Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, and the schmoes know, this is Marvel Movie News, bringing you the most up-to-date discussion and commentary within the Marvel Universe.
Excelsior to you, our merry Marvelites!
Welcome back to our 24th show of the year, 2015, 41 and all. We are the Marvel Movie News, coming to you live from the Danger Room, where we tell you all the news from all the studios and why you should be as excited as we are. How am I doing so far?
Okay.
Solid.
Yeah. Subscribe to us on iTunes at Marvel Movie News or find us through the Popcorn Talk Network. YouTube / Popcorn Talk Network. You can also find us through the Popcorn Talk's website, popcorntalknetwork.com. I feel pretty good about this. I think I finally got it down. Follow us on Twitter at Marvel News PTN. You can also follow us on Facebook / Marvel News Show. Make sure that you thumbs up us on YouTube. Keeps us coming back to you. Leave us some nice, great 5-star reviews on iTunes, and Koi will do his best to not butcher your name every week.
It's a whole thing.
Game that we play. And guys, if you'll tweet the link out to our show telling people about the live chat, Jonathan in the booth will retweet you. Isn't that right, Janarvis?
Yes. That is very much right.
I can't even say my name.
You live on Twitter now. Yeah. I'm at Matt Key.
I'm at the Matt Key, and we've got Alan here. What's a...
I am at Sizzler Kistler. That's SizzlerKistler.
And Koi.
And I'm Koi Jandro at CoyJandreau. We thought we got rid of one of me's. He came back. He's back. There's three still.
No.
For a week, there was only two. One day, there will be only one.
You're Trinity Lad.
I was like Jamie Madroxing so hard, man.
Trinity Lad.
there can be only one.
One day.
Well, apologies, guys, but Meredith is actually still out sick.
She was killed by Thomas the Train.
She couldn't take it.
Like aneurysm.
The tank engine got through to her, and
but we all saw that moment when it came out of the house, so that must have been quite traumatic.
She's like going to bed every night thinking like that's a possibility now. Like, oh, what if movies are real?
Most terrifying movie of all time.
we've got a little bit of Deadpool stuff to talk about today. Civil War, Jessica Jones, and of course Ant-Man, which we're going to get to later. And by the way, guys, when we get to Ant-Man, we're going to be talking spoilers. Like,
yeah, I'm sorry.
We've put it later in the show so you can catch up on almost all the news so you don't miss anything.
Right, we're keeping Ant-Man towards the end.
Yeah, so there's only two little things to talk about after that, but it's going to be a spoiler. We'll wave at you. We'll make sure that you know when we're talking about it. But yeah, just be warned if you haven't seen it yet and you don't want it to be spoiled. That's what we're going to be doing. But first, let's go over to Sony with some quick little Spider-Man news. Deadline reported on Thursday that John Francis Daly and Jonathan M. Goldstein are going to be... They're up for the writing Spider-Man. Spider-Man reboot. Yeah. I don't know if that means all three of them that they're planning on, or if just
I think
the first
depending
one.
Depending on how the one does.
Probably. But I think
very bold to be like, hey, there's three movies, and your credits are such classics as...
Vacation.
I'm so worried.
I trust Marvel.
But the screenwriters, I did not like, what was that magic movie they did? Steve Carell, Jim Carrey.
Oh, The Incredible Wonderstone.
People like that.
I didn't see it, so I don't know.
Exhibit A.
I didn't hear anything about it when it came out, really. It came and went like a magician.
Steve Carell was in it, right?
He was, and Jim Carrey. There were moments of... Yeah. But...
Yeah, I mean, you see every movie, so you're...
It's a problem.
No, it's not a problem. I think it's fantastic.
It's kind of a problem.
I saw Selfless last night because Ryan Reynolds was in it, and that was a weird move on my part.
Is it good?
It was fun. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't... see it if you have free time and free money. There's my review.
Everyone's free money. Everyone's got free money. They actually directed the upcoming Vacation reboot, but they also wrote it.
And it does look funny. Vacation looks really strong.
It does look funny, and it looks like it pays like really good homage to the original. Yeah. Like with that one scene where like he's flirting with the girl in the car and then she gets hit. Yep. Like
there's a lot of great nods just in the trailers. I'm excited for Vacation a lot.
But there
are past credits. What were the other ones we had?
The only two that I know that I have written down here are Horrible Bosses 2 and Incredible Burt Wonderstone.
I rest my case.
So
I loved Horrible Bosses 1. Somehow Horrible Bosses 2 felt like someone trying to spoof Horrible Bosses 1, but in like a feature-length setting, and it was very
odd. That's unfortunate.
It happens often with comedy sequels.
Yeah,
though.
Like Hangover 2 just being like a shot-for-shot, whatever that was.
Well, but it's... Again, we're seeing like a trend here of them pulling in comedians.
It's great.
And like we've got John Watts directing.
Yep.
He's a more comedic director who can handle more mature stuff, but like comedy is very strong at his core.
Well, they had that like comedy panel on Amazing Spider-Man 2 where they had a lot of comedians, like great comedians, writing mm-hmm. his jokes, which mm-hmm. I thought was brilliant. So I hope there's something like if T.J. Miller just comes in and talks as Spider-Man for a while. Like I want some of that, and that'd be great.
He and Chris Hardwick were so funny at the Fox panel at Comic-Con.
Horse theme.
Oh my god, it was killing me. If you guys have not seen the Fox panel and you're not averse to strong language, I highly suggest that you go find that
and
on YouTube.
Bestiality references.
Oh my god, it was killing me.
But I do like the idea that it's comedy writer. That's exciting. And that says a lot for the tone they're going for. And they've said, like, John Hughes movie. They've said a lot about, like, what...
Like, John Hughes is a superhero movie in high school. Yeah, I love it.
So I'm excited. I take it back. I talked myself out of being upset.
Dude,
I'm excited.
No, we talked you out of it.
We just talked
in
a loop. Here we are.
Yeah.
Excited.
Yeah. I'm glad. Yeah, I'm excited to see it. Like, you know, maybe we'll get, like, a 16 Candles or, you know...
16 Candles Spider-Man?
Yeah, that'd be great.
If only James Spader liked
That's
me better.
Amazing. Can Jed Nelson just be like Uncle
Ben? He's the principal.
That'd be fantastic.
Like Spider-Man, the Human Torch are in detention. Dr. Doom is keeping them after school. We can't use Dr. Doom. I'm sorry.
No.
The Red Skull.
Oh, Sony. No, Sony couldn't. But Marvel could license the Red Skull, but I'm sure.
Now
that
I'm thinking about it, I would love Jed Nelson in the Marvel Universe somewhere. Just like...
No,
as like a failed... He could be Leapfrog.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
What? He passes the mantle on to Frogman.
He's a diehard Chuck Palahniuk fan. Like, diehard. And he's like a friend of a friend of a friend. Whenever I see him, we have this amazing moment where we have like this book club where we compare all of like Chuck Palahniuk notes.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
And the idea of him just like darkly brooding in a Marvel movie makes me so happy. Let's do it, society.
Yeah.
They
wouldn't be Breakfast Club. They would be like what club
would
they be?
What could
they
do? Like, it's John Hughes-y. Like, that's interesting.
I don't know. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Pretty in Pink. It's just like Mary Jane, like gallivanting. This is what happens week after Ant-Man, you guys. Yeah.
So that's it for Sony. Like, I mean, that's not a lot of news, but it is cool to see, like, it kind of establishes what exactly, or it reaffirms what they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, we are trying to make this a funny movie, somewhat lighthearted, you know, which to me also means, like, they're going for the ultimate Spider-Man. Like, Ultimate Spider-Man is a lot like that, too.
Well,
so.
Ditko's a little... I think they're going like a Ditko ultimate amalgamation because they're talking about having him in high school, and I keep picturing like those Sandman issues and all that stuff.
Well, also, Ultimate Spider-Man, when Bendis and Bagley rocked that, they were making it in a way a throwback
to
the Stan Lee Ditko era, the Stan Lee John Romita era.
That issue 13 is still one of the best Spider-Man issues of all time, and he doesn't show
up.
It's
genius.
It's beautiful.
Which one is that one?
It's the one where he reveals to Mary Jane that he's Spider-Man.
Oh, so good.
Spider-Man doesn't show up once. There's not a panel of it. It's beautifully written.
Yeah. I mean, Bendis really knocked it out of the park with that series. The Gibbon guy on our live chat says Jed Nelson equals Dormammu.
Yes.
The principal of the school is Jed Nelson as Dormammu. Yeah. So let's
phase
jump.
Phase 7 is going to get that way. In Phase 7 is going to be so contrived and everyone's a superhero just like shrugging.
Peter Parker's day off. I like it, Wilson. I like it. I like it.
That is really good.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Yeah.
Like he steals the Fantastic Car and accidentally goes into the negative zone.
Like he backs out of the garage and smashes
it
and goes in the negative zone.
Right. Comes back, no Fantastic Car, but a Spider-Mobile.
The Spider-Man mobile rumored to come back with Dan Slott's
It is.
Oh, it's totally coming back. Dan is a friend of mine, and one of the things that we share is a love of the Spider-Mobile.
That's a bold love, sir.
You know, I think many
bold love.
It's like Greg Weisman, who did the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon. He won't tell anyone what would have happened in Young Justice Season 3 after it got canceled. But he did tell me that had Spectacular Spider-Man not been canceled, Season 3, Spider-Mobile.
Wow.
People love it.
There's
a market.
I just cannot get behind the Spider-Mobile.
Because it's so ridiculous. It's so dumb.
It's
Spider-Man.
Really is.
It's Spider-Man trying to be cool and failing, and that's what's fun about it. That it's not meant to be taken seriously.
Wasn't the spider buggy in Old Man Logan too? Right?
Yeah, it was like a huge plot point.
Yeah, that's how they got across the country or something like that. Right? I can't.
It's a weird world we live in.
Anyway, let's jump over to Fox real quick. X-Men Apocalypse. Brian Singer tweeted out a pic of Cairo in ruins. I mean, it's not really news. We know that, like, the world's going to come to a lot of destruction, but the fact it's Cairo...
It's called Apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the name says it all, really, Matt Key. But I just thought it was fun. Like, it's cool, and, like, I don't know. Like, maybe this is what happens. Like, Apocalypse discovers Storm, and he, like, attacks Cairo and kidnaps Storm or something?
Well, let's remember Storm's origin about our claustrophobia.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
so if they're going to do anything with that. Under,
yeah, right, so for starts. Folks who don't know, Storm, she's actually an American citizen. She was born in America. Her father was an American citizen. Her mother is Kenyan. They went to Egypt, and then while they were in Egypt, a plane crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And the building collapsed, and it killed her parents. And she survived, but from that incident, the trauma left her with claustrophobia.
Yeah,
and
then, like, she grew up debilitating claustrophobia. Yeah, yeah.
And she grew up in the streets for a while as a thief. At one point, actually picked Charles Xavier's pocket. And then a couple of years later, when her mutant power started emerging, she went off to Kenya, found her mother's people, and that's when her powers really emerged. And she found out she was apparently from a long line of weather witches, and
she became like sort of like a goddess.
Right, she became the Wind Rider.
Yeah,
which originally they said, oh, she worships them. She's worshipped as a goddess, and then later writers very nicely said, okay, Kenya is not that far out of, like,
yes,
modern technology,
yes,
and everything.
Thank
like
you.
They, and brought up, like, no, they didn't literally think she was a goddess. They thought she was blessed by, you know, great, great power of the earth.
Yeah.
And they paid her respect as a goddess would have been paid, because they just respected how she used her powers.
Yeah.
It wasn't literal. Either way, she was like that for a few years as Wind Rider,
yeah,
before Xavier recruited her. So we could very easily be seeing that backstory with Storm.
Do you think the Storm didn't do that, though? Do you think she didn't do the destruction? I think Apocalypse did the destruction, right?
Or just a plane crash happens because the world's a dangerous place.
That is true. That is true. Well, yeah, I'm excited about that. And also, we don't have these pictures up, but, like, they just released, like, some high-def images from the movie. Like, it's the same stuff that they released last week, but it's just higher definition. That happened today. So you can go find those things if you want to. Deadpool real quick. Not any real news, but our friend Audrey Kearns, who runs Geek Girl Authority, has a podcast called Kneel Before Odd, where she interviewed one of the two writers for Deadpool, Rhett Reese, and we asked him a couple questions, or I asked him a couple questions through her, one of them being, what was it like to write the fourth wall, and how did that go? And then the other one being, why did he choose Ajax over, like, T-Ray or, I don't know, Hitmonkey? I mean, because...
Dude, the sequel, if anyone's Hitmonkey reference.
Netflix Hitmonkey series.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Netflix, if you listen to our show, which, why wouldn't you? Hitmonkey. Hitmonkey.
Hitmonkey.
Hitmonkey.
Why wouldn't you listen?
Why wouldn't you listen to us, Netflix? Listen to us. Anyway, on the podcast, he said something that I thought was interesting, where he said, talking about why they chose Ajax over all the other villain possibilities, he said he had a sadistic quality and his imperviousness to pain and what that implied about him. Just the fact that someone doesn't feel pain maybe doesn't really feel anything at all. So he's like this emotionless killing machine who doesn't feel anything at all.
He's a Terminator.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just thought that was interesting because we've also, like, if you've seen the trailer, then you know, like, Deadpool, like, Wade Wilson actually has feelings.
Yeah.
Like, he's, like, actually in love with this Vanessa chick. And, you know, like, there's that one part at the beginning of the trailer where he says something like, just do right by me so I can do right by someone else. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, he's, like, in love with this chick and he's trying to make himself better. And then he runs into this
interesting way to set the trailer up, like, actually showing Deadpool as a dude, like, in the cancer. I never expected them to go that way, personally.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to see a moment of him in, like, the X-ray. That was really cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is, as we got to know more of the story, Mark Waid first started touching that vein of that there was a tortured soul there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe Kelly just really exploded it when he did the first Deadpool series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was this great, especially in Deadpool issue zero,
mm-hmm.
or minus one, rather, the flashback issue. Where you see that there was a tortured, dark, kind of, you know, sarcastically funny guy who then became nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that nuts, part of that madness is protection.
Yeah.
From not dealing with what terrible things have happened to him.
Yeah. He's just running away. Like, you know, I mean, how can you deal with the fact that, like, you get decapitated and then your body knits itself back together,
yeah,
you know?
He's immortal, but in constant pain. Yeah.
And instead of dealing with, like, Wolverine being a grumpy, he's the opposite. Like, he's out. I love that they handle his character. I love that they flesh him out more and more, like, Dugan and Passain's run
with
his daughter and everything was
great.
Not expecting to enjoy that much. And the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, when he finds those mutants that are all, like, deformed and rotting because of his, like, it's so...
Yeah.
Read. Yeah. Read comics.
Read Deadpool.
Read Deadpool.
Read Deadpool.
Maybe not the first miniseries.
Yeah.
What, like the first one before Joe took over?
No, because there were two miniseries before Joe took over. There was the first miniseries with Joey Mad, and then there was
second. He was still basically just a mercenary, like just a really cool mercenary.
And
at
it
that
was
point,
just
right?
like,
was
oh, just look, Black Tom. Right yeah, it was just like, oh, look, Black Tom Cassidy is a tree. And then the second miniseries was when Mark Waid wrote that mini.
Yeah.
And because Mark Waid's brilliant, we started touching into real character stuff. You found out he ran to Banshee when they were both younger.
Yeah.
And then Joe Kelly did the main series.
Yeah. No, the main series was a lot of fun.
So good. Those first 25 issues, that's a solid arc.
It's crazy how they went from being like, we're a spoof character, like shamelessly ripping off something, to like a character with an odd amount of heart for the way he started. Like, they really developed something from nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, I do want to jump back to Apocalypse real quick, because I forgot to say this. We had a lot of people tweeting at us about how awful Apocalypse looks in the pictures, and he does, to be fair. He looks terrible. Like, he does... he looks like Ivan Ooze, which is what everyone keeps saying.
So I'm justifying this in my brain, though, because this movie does take place in the 80s.
Right.
Perhaps Apocalypse just hasn't left the 70s yet.
It's possible.
Mutant fever. He's just rocking it out. Like, this is a cool cat Apocalypse.
It's certainly, like, his costume does have a bit of, like, 80s flair to it, which I think might be a mistake if that is indeed the case. But I will say... I don't think that's what Apocalypse is going to look like.
No, they're going to augment CGI.
He's going to be so augmented. He's going to be so much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And the colors are bright. I think
they muddy those down. He's a gray mutant. Why is he purple or blue?
No, because they're going to like do so much color correction in there. Like, they've got to make the colors pop now so that they can play with the colors in post.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they're going to end up doing. Like, Apocalypse in the pictures is going to not look anything like he does in the finished film.
No, we've gone through this with so many movies. The first time we were seeing...
The first image, we're in shock. And
the first Hugh Jackman in a costume image, we're like, really? That looks kind of lame. Yeah. And then you watch the movie like, oh, with the lighting and the direction and the context, it works.
Yeah, exactly.
The only costume I've seen was like, yes, Deadpool. The only time I've ever been like,
exactly.
That's perfect. Yeah. And that's not common. So I have full faith. I'm excited. I just felt like we should mention that it does now look like crap.
And
no, it looks very Power Rangers-like now, which I know everyone has said, but that's because it's true.
It's true. Like, you can't run away from that. It looks like a Power Ranger, but...
It will get better.
It's going to get so much better, and there have been a few people who have tweeted at us, like... many people, like, where it's like the images have been doctored and stuff like that, and it's... I think he's going to look great. And plus, we already know that one of his powers, because Oscar Isaacs talked about it, is that he can grow and shrink and manipulate his molecules and all of that other stuff. So
much
like
Ant-Man.
Exactly. Like,
yes.
And what's funny is that Apocalypse is going to go into the quantum realm, and he's going to see
Ant-Man.
We keep the spoilers for later.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. Oh, man. I hope I didn't ruin anything for people. Anyway, I just wanted to address that real quick, because some people have been... frustrated by that, and
yes.
I don't think that is nowhere close to what the finished product is gonna
look I still have lots of hope for X-Men,
and by the way, like, Quicksilver, when we first saw Quicksilver,
we were all like whoa, what a tool.
But it ended up being great, and it was one of the best scenes from that
incredible.
Movie.
Well, also, they just played in the fact of he looks like a tool because he is a tool.
Yeah.
Entertainingly so.
Yeah.
And, like, his first appearance we saw him in was in a Jack in the Box commercial, which, do you remember that?
Oh,
the first
yeah.
time, and I was like, what are they doing?
That was terrible.
And then they showed him, and I was like, wow. He
no, 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 it was Carl's Jr.
Carl's Jr., that's right.
Because
Carl Jr. has terrible marketing. I'm going to say this just in general. They have terrible, when it's not sexist, it's just awful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, two versions of Marvel.
Yeah.
Pick
yeah.
your point.
Yeah,
Super Finch. I want to call out what you just said, which is that I can't wait for them to CGI the tattoos off the Joker. And as a devout Joker fan, thank you.
That's too funny. All right. So, oh, Tomas Zelenka says that spoiler ruined his childhood. So,
Tomas,
I apologize. I did not mean to ruin your the entirety of your childhood.
A couple
childhood.
People are asking, what's a quantum realm? Your parents will explain it to you when you're older.
We will be getting to quantum realm stuff in a bit.
A proton and a neutron love each other very much. Yeah.
They make a little electron.
They make a little quantum
sweet
realm.
Little electron, yeah. Captain America, we're going to jump over to Marvel now. Captain America Civil War, we're going to get our first look at the film at D23.
Very exciting.
So,
not a surprise, but it's still exciting.
Not a surprise, and we kind of thought that they were probably going to do that. So we're like, when the press release came out, and it was like, hey, guess what we're going to be doing? We're like, oh, okay, surprise.
Yeah.
That's why we all bought tickets.
Yeah.
The Disney Con is going to have stuff for Disney-owned movies. That's amazing.
That's amazing. Get right out of town, Disney. So I will say, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and maybe I have the minority opinion, but I am disappointed that Marvel wasn't at Comic-Con to show this off, and I think it's a bad move to be like, hey, it's at D23. What's up?
I think it's they already get enough crap for being like, Disney is taking over. I don't think it was a smart move either, but I still, it's a good business move to get people to go to D23.
It's a good move for that, but honestly, like, it's probably a smart move for them.
Yeah, but
in some ways, because it does force people to go to D23, which is something that they're trying to make a bigger deal.
Right, but it does. So I guess that from a comic perspective,
exactly, because like people are going to show up to Captain America: Civil War regardless of if it's at Comic Con, like
right. It already has its money built.
We already know we're all going to go see it regardless of its presence at Comic Con. So, but it is still just like, oh, but I wanted to go. I want to see something. I've got to go to D23. Oh, okay.
And turn into Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, apparently so. I don't know why I did that, but also staying with Civil War, Martin Freeman discussed his role. It's the first time he's really said anything about it, but he says about the role, here's the quote, whoever he's playing, he works for the American government. He works in conjunction with the superheroes and certain agencies that help to tame the superhero's power. So you're not quite sure which side he's on. It looks a little bit like he's playing one game when actually he's playing another. It's the kind of character I like because it's ambiguous and because you don't know whether he's good or bad. So,
to me, that sounds like Norman Osborn.
See, oh, no way he's Norman Osborn.
But it sounds like it. I hope he's not, because I like Martin Freeman. He's not my Norman Osborn. But the way that sounds like Thunderbolts.
See, that to me actually sounds like if he's not Everett K. Ross, which was my initial guess.
God, I would love for him to be Everett Ross.
But if he's not Everett Ross, then I would get... That sounds to me like Henry Peter Gyrick.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, is that he's Gyrick.
So for those of you who don't know, like Gyrick, he first appeared in the 1980s, and he was basically a liaison between the Avengers and the government. And he was
a jerk.
Yeah, he was there to put a leash on the Avengers. Yeah. He told them, you're not allowed to have too many members.
Oh, that's
true.
He
recruited Falcon into the Avengers without telling them because he wanted minority representation. And they liked Falcon. They just didn't like being told who was their members.
Well, and they had to kick out Hawkeye to do it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And he had a lot of clashes with the Avengers about procedure, about whether they were following, in his mind, the government
agenda. They had to always get clearance to fly anywhere around the world.
Right.
Yeah, like, he had them under his thumb.
Right. And
I hope it's Gyrick.
There was sort of a version of Gyrick that was in the X-Men movies, because Gyrick has had a lot of experience with the X-Men movies. But he's sort of a gray area character, and actually they might have a loophole anyway, because when Gyrick showed up in X-Men, they misspelled his name in the credits.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
So you could actually, legally speaking, use that as a loophole if you wanted to use Gyrick in the Marvel Studios films.
That's funny.
Maybe
they had to spell it. Like, maybe there was some sort of, like, clause or something. That's interesting. Then.
I will say, like, he is too much of a sort of, like, waffly sort of, like, kind of character than I ever saw Gyrich being, like, or Gyrick. Like, Gyrick
is
just,
he is an actor, so I would like to see him play, if he can definitely do a dick. Like, he was, there was a movie called Dedication.
Yeah.
Where he was just a smarmy bastard. And so he can definitely play like smarmy sort of double dealing. You give him some tinted sunglasses, like he can rock that.
Do you think we'll get
also Gyrick did eventually redeem himself, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll get Iron Fist casting at D23?
No.
I want it.
Dude, I want it too, but they, like, we don't
Daniel
even
Day
know,
Kim.
Like, I don't even think they know how to do the show yet. Like, the last I heard, like, I remember reading something.
They're trying to get the tone, yeah. I remember reading about, like,
well, I remember reading something, like, 6 weeks ago about how, like, they're trying to figure out, like, how to do the supernatural stuff. Like, yeah. And apparently, like, Marvel and Netflix are like,
They threaded it well through Daredevil. Yeah.
They did, but, like, it seems like there's kind of, like, there's something going on at between Marvel and Netflix on that particular show where they're a bit at odds.
Yeah, it's fair.
It shouldn't be that hard. Kun Lun is one of the easier things to deal with, in my opinion.
You would think so, but it like, I don't know. That's what
Let's
I read.
Make his fist glow.
Well, no, I think it's like the whole mystical element of how he got the Iron Fist and like having to defeat the dragon Shu Lao and all that stuff.
They're overthinking it.
Maybe so. I don't know. I'm just
Netflix.
Saying.
Let's talk.
Netflix. Still, you're still listening, right?
You're still listening, right? I mean, why would you not?
I mean, come on.
Come on.
There are very easy ways to streamline the Iron Fist thing to fit into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's not that hard.
I don't think we're going to get any sort of casting news for that until later this year, like much later this year. I would be surprised. I'll say that based on what I've heard and read. But it would be cool.
Guy wants to know if you think they'll do Doctor Strange concept art.
Probably. They've already showed it at like that Cine Europe thing.
Oh, that's right.
So I would imagine that they're going to show it here. And hopefully I can get into the D23.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still trying to figure that out. So.
Cons, man. Man,
they're the worst. They're so impossible. It's like, hey, we want to give you free press. Oh, you don't want it? Okay. I'll just be over here.
Okay. Two towns over.
I'll be about an hour north just wishing I could see that really awesome Doctor Strange stuff.
Better than being in La Jolla during Comic-Con, sir. That broke my spirit.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right, look. We are going to now go talk about Ant-Man.
Is that all the news?
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah, it's under Civil War over there.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Sorry, guys.
You sure you don't want to talk about someone's haircut first?
Do we want to do all that and then get to Ant-Man?
Yeah, let's keep Ant-Man in the very end.
We'll do Ant-Man at the very end. Yeah. You're right. So we're going to jump to television real quick, where Chloe Bennett chopped all of her hair off.
Oh, my God.
Quick. It's not really news, but
it's not news.
No, but dude. Come on. I'm excited to see the short haircut Quake. I'm excited about that. I think that's gonna be cool. Like, I don't know.
When Jennifer Lawrence got a haircut, it was trending on CNN.
Well, was it really?
CNN.
Yeah, there was like world news about her haircut, and I was
that's funny.
Oh, Idiocracy, we live in you.
Yeah.
CNN is as a good website, and what's on the actual channel is embarrassing sometimes.
Yeah. So like, I know it's not a big deal, but like, I am excited as a fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. to see Quake with short hair.
Follow in your lead, CNN. Look at this hair news.
It's not hair news to me. It's like we're getting that. Like,
is
we're
that a subgenre of news? Hair news.
Hair news.
Is that
hair
what edition. We called the Rachel cut back in the 90s? Remember that?
That was a big deal
when everyone was talking about Rachel's haircut on Friends.
I had a man bun for a movie. I mean, I get you. It's a hair news.
I just get a haircut every 6 weeks. That's just I don't.
Like. I'm getting one done later today.
Oh, you're gonna be so handsome.
Is that news?
It's gonna be huge. It's gonna be huge news. It's going to break the internet.
Going to be at Floyd's.
So we've got that. And then on Netflix, real quick, we've got Jessica Jones, real quick. It's not, again, this isn't news.
But it's a good
cool.
endorsement.
It's
a good
really
endorsement.
Cool.
This is more news than hair.
You're such a dick. Get out. Get out. Why did I invite you onto the show? Get out of here, Sizzler. Bendis, who created Jessica Jones in the miniseries Alias, well, not miniseries, but like the smaller kind of more contained series.
It had a couple dozen issues.
Yeah.
A few dozen.
He created it through Alias, Jessica Jones. He loves the show. He says he's seen the first couple episodes. And his direct quote is, "The show is good. I've seen the first couple episodes, and because I didn't work on it directly, I can say this with full no ego fanfare, I loved it. And believe me, I was going to be the hardest on it, harder than any of you. Jessica's part of my DNA. A bad Jessica Jones show would have hurt me deeply."
Bendis is not someone to give false praise on that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, he and Dan Slott were asked to watch the Spider-Man musical when it was being put together.
Oh, God.
And they flat out told, like, look, this is a bad idea. This is,
don't ask us to be honest here.
Yeah, like, this
please.
Is, this is, you're doing it wrong. And they're like, well, we hear you. We're going to do our own thing. And then what happened? The night I went to see Spider-Man the Musical.
You've seen it.
Oh, yes. I want to see
I saw both versions because there was the original version, mm-hmm. and then they fired Julie Taymor. And they, Francisco Aguirre Sacasa rewrote and redid parts of it, which is a great choice to do that because he is a Broadway dude, he's a theater guy, and he does comics. But the first night I went to see it, it was during previews. Hugh Jackman was sitting four rows ahead of me. And I really wanted at intermission to be able to like have the clout to go up to him and say, "So worse than Wolverine Origins?" Because I say yes. It was ridiculous. And they were what saved me was that there were children around me who were just could not deal with this. Like, there's this one maybe 8-year-old girl who just
There was an 8-year-old girl hating
the
Spider-Man
musical?
She
was so not down with this. She was just so not down with this. And
wasn't there a character named Swiss Miss in that?
Yes, she was a woman made of many knives.
So ridiculous.
And no, they introduced the Sinister Six via a supervillain fashion show.
Oh.
Like, they had a runway, and they were announcing, like, you know, he's the dispossessed mind of a Nazi who's inhabiting a bee colony. It's Swarm! Like, literally, that's what's happening. And I'm using the correct use of the word literally.
You're literally using
that's
literally correctly?
Yes.
Fight Club musical is moving forward.
Good.
Sorry to put that out there. Trent Reznor's on music. Chuck Palahniuk's helping write, and David Fincher's consulting. So I just wanted to. That's exciting.
I just don't know how I feel about a Fight Club musical.
I don't know how I feel either. But no. A rock opera. I mean, like Rocky Horror. Like
I'm out.
I'm just gonna say one more thing. There was Dan Slott and I reenacted the musical in a bar one night because we were just so we couldn't deal with how ridiculous it was. But the possibly the most ridiculous thing, other than the implication that Spider-Man kills most of his villains, is that when they did the wrestling scene where he's against, they used Bone Saw instead of the name Crusher. they have a fake little wrestling stage, and the actor came out to wrestle what was just a blow-up doll of a wrestler. And so he's picking it up and spinning around, and that's how he was displaying his superhuman strength. And they had a little curtain behind the wrestling ring, so a dude was clearly holding the arms of the balloon and trying to, like, mockingly punch Spider-Man.
Geez.
It was... I was watching a man fight a balloon.
Oh, God.
In a show that had spent millions of dollars. I think it took, like, $1 million just to run that show every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was what I was watching in Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. And the next day, I couldn't tell you half the songs I'd heard. Out of the brain.
Oh, that sucks.
Isn't that Lion King?
Out of the brain.
Well,
sorry for that rant, everyone.
Going back to Jessica Jones.
Oh, that's where we started.
Yeah, that's where this started. Kristen Ritter. So he has another one other quote that I wanted to throw out there. I'm actually more excited for what he says here. He says Kristen Ritter is so good, and Michael Coulter. Wait until you see Michael Coulter. The casting of Luke Cage, in my opinion, and I have said this to everyone behind the scenes, is as strong and spot on as the casting of Tony Stark. It's probably the hardest to cast, and they got it perfect. So
interesting.
Apparently, Mike Coulter is Luke Cage, according to Bendis, which I'm excited for. I want a really solid, really strong.
Oh yeah,
you know, Luke Cage.
We're gonna see him before Black Panther, aren't we?
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're gonna see him then later this year. It airs this fall.
Because Jessica Jones, I think, comes out this fall.
Yeah, like October or something. So yeah, we'll see him soon.
And then
yeah.
I think the Daredevil sequels season two is filming now, so we'll probably see that. We'll probably see that before we see Luke Cage.
Oh, his own show,
yeah.
I think so.
I think we'll see Daredevil season two before we see the Luke Cage, but I think Luke Cage starts filming after Daredevil wraps.
So cool.
So
excited.
I mean, this is going to be just an interesting show all around. You've got Jessica Jones herself, who ever thought that she would be on a live-action adaptation before, like, She-Hulk or Captain Marvel or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so...
It feels like a weird choice, but, like, I'm excited
That's why it's cool.
Yeah.
And you've also got... I mean, and Daredevil on Netflix was so solid, so I'm looking forward to see how this is. I really am curious to see David Tennant as the Purple Man.
Oh my gosh.
That's going to be David Tennant can play a good bad guy.
Oh man.
And unapologetically bad.
And like creepy, like his like his role as a Barty Crouch Jr. in Goblet of Fire,
right.
like I loved it. I thought that was great.
Like, yeah, I do. He's an actor. He's a Shakespearean trained actor.
Yeah, like when they first announced him as Purple Man, like that's the first thing I was like, wait, he was Barty Crouch Jr. That's gonna like he was creepy as hell in that film. So yeah, I'm excited for it.
And then you've got Luke Cage, and I kind of want Nicolas Cage to have a cameo.
That would be because Nicolas Cage named
because Nicolas Cage took his name after Luke Cage.
Yeah. Right, that'd be amazing.
And I want him to meet Luke Cage and maybe be a fan of his.
He should be wearing like, a leather jacket, the closest we get to his Ghost Rider again.
Right, like he should be playing himself as Nick Cage,
absolutely.
Who sees Luke Cage and is like, oh my god, I'm such a fan of you. Can I have your autograph?
That'd be amazing. I would love that.
So that guy KJ just asked exactly who is Jessica Jones.
So. Some of you might know that the original Spider-Woman was Jessica Drew. And Bendis, a while back, when he was still kind of cutting his teeth on Marvel, and he wasn't yet playing with Spider-Man and such.
And this is like the early 2000s, right?
Yeah. He wanted to do a series on Jessica Drew. Last time we'd seen Jessica Drew in the comics, she had lost most of her powers and was apparently working as a private investigator. So Brian Michael Bendis wanted to do a series starring Jessica Drew as a private investigator and explore what it is to be a private investigator who used to be a superhero and still exists in that world even if she doesn't want to.
It's kind of similar to what he did with Powers in a lot of ways.
Right. So Marvel, though, said, no, we don't want you to use Jessica Drew. You know, make up someone else. You know, make up an original character, and that way we don't have to deal with any baggage around her or anything. And so he just made up a new character named Jessica Jones, who looked a little bit different, but then gave her the same backstory. Mm-hmm. So Jessica Jones is truly one of the first major Marvel retcons where we were getting retroactive continuity that was affecting comics we'd already seen. So we were being told that, oh yeah, during these years of the Avengers and stuff, there was this other person, Jessica Jones, who temporarily became this superhero called Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
And she had another name, I always forget, like
I can't remember.
But that she'd been a superhero and she'd had some terrible experiences.
Yeah.
She was mind controlled She attacked the Avengers one time and she got the crap beaten out of her by the Avengers because they didn't know who she was. And she was taken hostage and mind controlled by the Purple Man for a couple of months, I think. It was weeks or months.
Yeah.
And
it was like, I think it was a couple of months.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a couple of months. And it just dealt with, you know, now she was out of that game, but she was still an investigator. And it was very much a noir detective series, which was great because Marvel wasn't doing anything like that at the time. And on top of that, so rarely do you see a noir detective series starring a woman as the detective.
Yeah.
And Bendis loves Luke Cage. So very quickly, first story arc, Luke Cage is there as a friend of Jessica's who sometimes she messed around with. And then they became much more entrenched in each other's lives.
Got married.
They got married. They had a kid before that.
Schoolgirl's babysitter.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so Jessica Jones started off as this sort of character who was retroactively tucked into the Marvel Universe history, but and has since become this really solid character.
In the exact same way that Winter Soldier did. Like, it was like, hey, we're going to retcon this story and kind of add it back in. And now Winter Soldier is everywhere. Like, he's one of their bigger characters.
Yeah, and there's a sense that they've always been there.
Yeah.
And also
just
with
unseen.
Yeah, and also with Jessica Jones, like, we even got retroactively in her past that she went to high school with Peter Parker.
She had a giant crush on him.
And had a huge crush on him. And he, like, vaguely remembers her being in high school, not really.
I love it. It's so cool. Avengers, it's so fun. Yeah.
It was way fun. And what I really like, though, is that she's never gone back to a superhero role. She has remained Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
So technically, we've never seen her actually be a superhero except in flashback.
That's like in this latest Mighty Avengers run, there were a couple moments where she exercised her power, but it was always in defense. It was never like,
what I'm saying is she never resumed her superhero life.
She never put on the tights again.
No,
she,
like, that I do agree with, but we do get to see her, like,
oh no, you see her kick ass.
Like, and that makes it so much more rewarding when she does use her powers, because it's like she doesn't do it and she doesn't like chase after that. It's a thing of, I can stop this fight when I need to and have to.
Well, it was similar to when Dazzler first appeared. Part of what made Dazzler so interesting was she didn't want to freaking be a superhero. She just wanted to make music.
Yeah,
she just wanted to be in roller skates and be awesome.
Yeah,
which she was.
And if the rumors are true, it would be so fun if Taylor Swift was Dazzler. Like, that would be amazing.
I would watch the hell out of that.
Oh my god.
I would so watch the hell out of that.
I don't think that that's anywhere close to what's actually going on, like when she took that picture with the cast of X-Men, but that would be pretty freaking cool. So that's Jessica Jones. Like she can fly. She's super strong. She got all of her powers from a chemical spill car accident. Mm-hmm. And she goes on to become like a private eye and kind of have that noir lifestyle. So I hope we answer that. And also, as Sean Shells points out, Patsy Walker is in the show. Mm-hmm. So and I think plays like one of her best friends.
Yeah,
and that's Hellcat. So so now we're gonna jump to Ant-Man. We're gonna use the last like 20 minutes of the show to talk Ant-Man.
These will be spoilers. We're not talking about anything after Ant-Man. So
if you haven't seen Ant-Man, you can pause here, go watch Ant-Man, come back.
Yeah.
Your life, go crazy.
Yeah, the only thing we're gonna handle after this is the iTunes
and the shout-outs
and the Wizard World question of the month, which we haven't been able to address for 2 weeks. So
that was a good one.
That was a good one too. So that's all you're gonna miss if you have to shut us off now, but this is gonna be spoiler heavy for the rest of the show. So Ant-Man.
Oh, and maybe comic stuff. Someone just asked.
We're probably gonna talk some comic stuff.
Briefly.
But it'll just be brief. So you can come back and find our show and go to like the last like 4 minutes of the show and be fine. So anyway, let's start with best moments. Like, what were the best moments and like stand? So for me, obviously I love the Quantum Realm.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that in a second. Obviously I love that. The tank. The second I saw Scott Lang, the second I saw him like go into the house and he's like sneaking around and he sees the keychain, he sees the tank. I'm like, oh my god, please be an actual tank.
Yeah.
Please be an actual tank.
Yeah. So I liked it.
So like I had that thought and then I completely forgot about it. And then like there he's like in the lab and he's like, oh, I've been shot. Oh, this is so tough. And she's like, we're gonna get you out of here. We're gonna have to find a way. And he's like, the tank. And I'm like, yes.
That's not a keychain.
Yes. So, yeah. Like, when that, like, comes bursting out
Michael
of the
Douglas,
building.
Man, he was great in that.
Oh, my God. I love that. So, that's one of my top moments. What about you guys?
I was surprised at how tonally it was a straight-up comedy. And I usually don't like repetition jokes, but I loved backing up, just backing up.
Backing up.
Usually that kind of joke doesn't work for me, but Michael Pena, man, he was just slaying it.
Michael Pena as Luis.
T.I.'s been in everything this year, and every time he's on screen, I'm so happy. And like T.I. and Entourage was part of Entourage. T.I. is just awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
T.I., you're my Ben Foster of the week. What T.I.?
Ben Foster's been replaced just this week.
Just this week. T.I.
That's
cameo.
Fair. That's
T.I.
fair.
Killing
That's
it,
fair.
T.I., thank you.
No, Luis was great.
Yeah.
That, like, and what I loved was that like he was like, he was this criminal who stole, like, he tried to steal, like, a slushy machine or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But, like, then he also goes to wine tastings and art museums.
He's into mad neo-cubism.
And
he's like, yeah, like yes. I'm totally into, like,
yes.
neo-cubism. Like,
yes,
I'm more
Luis, we would hang out.
And his, like, his long diet. Oh, before we move on, another favorite moment. My friend Anna Akana is the first person to ever mention Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe. And that makes me so happy that I can never be Spider-Man. I'm too old. I am closer to Spider-Man involvement because my friend was the hot Asian girl at the end that mentioned Spider-Man, and that makes me so happy.
I love Anna.
She's
like,
yeah.
I've not met her.
Oh, Anna's the sweetest.
I like her work.
So Anna, congrats. That's so cool. She was like, yeah, I got a small part. And I'm like, I expected her to be like Scientist 3. And then I waited and waited. And then she said, guy who swings. And I was like,
I was wondering if she was supposed to be Betty Brant.
She's writer in the credits.
Writer.
But yeah. it was incredible. I was so excited. So go Anna.
This we were talking about this before. That Ant-Man was sort of the Spider-Man movie I wanted.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Now I will say that half of Ant-Man does not work for me for various reasons.
Yeah.
But the other half, man, it is solid. And there are lessons the Marvel movies and superhero movies in general can take from this. And I think the biggest lesson is how you do a shared universe the right way.
Oh, man.
Because the Falcon scene...
That Falcon scene
worked not just because we got to have a fun... Note, fun,
mm-hmm.
not overly...
Look at
the stubble and the dark grimness and this isn't for kids scene. We had a fun fight scene. That was really just a skirmish. It made complete sense why they were attacking each other, but they also didn't go overboard.
And that they'd be friends later.
And it was a way of acknowledging Ant-Man lives in a larger universe with the superheroes. But they did it, they set it up in a way where it made sense that Falcon wouldn't be at the last scene later. Yeah. He doesn't know what's happening. And they were able to address things without having the weight of Avengers bog down Ant-Man or make him seem unnecessary. And, and just the way it handles the shared universe, perfect. That is how you do it.
Yeah.
And within 30 seconds, it sets up the tone is totally different from anything we've had with Marvel. You know it's a comedy from the get-go.
Yeah.
As soon
yeah.
as you meet Michael Penny, is like, my mom died, my dad got deported, but I got this van. Like, as soon as he starts talking, you're like, oh my God, this movie. Like, it knows what it is. It dove in, and I love it.
Yeah, and it ran with it. It ran with it. It was so good.
And
so
there were so many Edgar Wright thumbprints on it, which I enjoyed, because I really, I mean, everyone on the show knows I've been upset that he wasn't on it, but the Cure moment was amazing. The best fight in a long time was in that briefcase.
Oh my God, that's briefcase fight was incredible. Like, and he's like, I'm going to disintegrate you.
Yeah.
Disintegration like, by the Cure, fun. Yeah.
I thought tonally some of the action felt off. Like, I was like, I wanted more comedy, and then action would happen to be like, I could use more comedy. Like, it felt a little hodgepodge at points, but I was way more concerned it would feel more hodgepodge. I thought it was going to be like a 60-40 split, but overall I really enjoyed like 80% of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it was
a lot
of fun.
Yeah. No, it was so much fun. And, the Falcon thing, like, just, it killed me because it was like, He took down an Avenger, and he took down an Avenger using his power.
Taking down the Avengers,
and he
intelligently. See, this is the other
that's
thing.
The thing. Like,
this
is the
intelligent
other thing.
Dude. Yeah, right. We've talked about this before. I really want superhero movies to focus, like superhero comics do, on the fact that it's battles can't always be won by hitting until you're done hitting.
Yeah,
they have to be won creatively because then you're really showcasing why the hero is the hero.
Yeah,
because it's not just a guy in a suit. The guy knows.
And it's not just might makes right. It's not just the strongest person gets to win. You know,
he outsmarted in that moment an Avenger and won.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then he came back and was like, I fought an Avenger. I loved it.
And talk about like a plight of the nerd. Like, that's like the nerd's plight. Yeah. Like, we're nerds. We're not going to overpower anybody.
Dude,
like,
Paul Rudd
was
incredible.
I am in no way a gay man, but I was in love with him. I was like, I'm on board. I'm on board. I will do whatever you want, Paul Rudd. Like,
it was Baskin Robbins always finds out.
Baskin Robbins always
like,
finds out.
Talk about charisma. Talk about charisma. That guy just oozed it. Like, the second he came on screen, I was like, yes, Paul Rudd, whatever you want. Like, yeah.
And I felt that, but I didn't feel that way with Corey Stoll. I like Corey Stoll a lot.
And that was my
negative.
Someone just brought that up as well, that Corey Stoll was the problem. And I've heard that Corey Stoll is actually upset.
Because they cut some stuff, I imagine?
That they cut out quite a bit.
Because he was only crazy.
Really?
They were like, the Pym particles are making
and
him
this
crazy.
Is,
He's
so,
only been
so now
crazy.
This is the half that didn't work for me. And it's it works in two major parts. One is that the villain is really one-dimensional. And this is a problem we keep seeing.
One-dimensional.
We keep seeing this in Marvel over and over again. They're not giving us really good villains.
Loki has been kind of like the
Loki's
only one.
Loki's been a standout. And Ultron was at least fun. But but, you know, everyone else is just... The most interesting villain other than Loki has been Robert Redford's character in Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fair.
Because at least we saw his point of view.
Right.
Yeah.
And we understood where he was coming from.
He wasn't fun,
right.
but
everyone else
more
is just across the board evil. Now, with Red Skull, that can work because he's a damn Nazi.
Yeah.
But...
about as evil as you.
Right. But with, like, Malekith... With Whiplash,
Justin Hammer, Kildrick, growl.
They're all just mustache twirling.
Guy.
Yeah, they're black hats.
Yeah,
and it's really lame. We can do better, especially when you have someone as talented as
Corey Stoll's incredible.
Corey Stoll.
Man.
He's such a great actor, and he can
do
such subtle acting.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You watch one episode of House of Cards, you can see so much emotion in him, so many layers.
And there were moments where you could see them directing him wrong.
Yes, and so that, and along with that, for the same thing with Hope and women in general in the movie were treated so lazily. It was everything was the most generic thing you could
it
do
really was.
With a woman in an action film. We saw the fiance of Scott's ex-wife
more than we saw her. Yeah, we saw her in like two or three scenes.
She is just treated as an obstacle. She's not a character.
Yeah.
And likewise, Hope Van Dyne is initially an obstacle, and then she falls into that trope of, I'm kind of not humorless. I'm kind of a humorless businesswoman, like so many humorless action heroes who are women in media. She's like got the father figure who's an authority type, but no mother. And it's just this trope we keep seeing over and over again. On top of that, the whole thing of not knowing how her mother died or disappeared, there is no story reason or logical reason for her to be lied to about that for 2 decades.
Yeah. A few years, certainly. But
when she's, I could understand if she was 14, maybe, and then like, yeah. You know,
not like, but a businesswoman, but like, yeah, a grown,
like,
woman.
Freaking 20. It's been 25 years. They mentioned that she's been
that
lied to
Paul
about
Rudd
this
line, though. I gotta say,
no one
else could have delivered that but Paul Rudd.
But see, you could have had other reasons for
to
them being estranged.
Oh, absolutely.
You could have even had, frankly, Janet and Hank be divorced as they are in the comics.
Right.
Yeah.
But even beyond that, if you do for some reason need to have Janet lost in the quantum realm. Which I don't think you do. But you still could have had this where it just made no sense to me that he's also blaming himself so much. It's like, look, you're really sort of robbing her of the fact of, like, Mom died a hero. Mom made a decision and was awesome and rocked out. And you're
even says that. She says, this isn't your fault. She made her choice.
But at the same time, she's sort of forgiving him instead of pointing out, it made no sense for you to lie to me about this for 25 years.
Yeah.
She does
say that. She says, well, I just don't understand why it took you so long. But she doesn't make a big deal out of it. And then Paul Rudd interrupts
the
moment.
Like, there's a difference. Like, she's not acknowledging, like, it really doesn't make any sense. She's just saying, like, no, I would have understood. Like, no, this is beyond that. This is weird. It's bad storytelling. And you have to make her interesting beyond her relationships with other men. Yes, Rob Nips. You have to.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Hope has all the potential to be interesting beyond. And
I hope they get that next, because the last credit scene gives a lot of hope.
And that's nice, but I'm sick of saying I hope we see more of it next, and
right,
I hope we see more of it later.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you could have had this be that she's the one doing the main, that she is getting into the Wasp suit, and she's going to do the main plan, but the fact is, they still need Scott because she's not a heist person.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't think that way.
Yeah.
So you still could have had Scott be necessary without her being told time and time again for lame reasons that she has to be in the sidelines because she's something to be protected, because she's too valuable, because she can't, you know, none of the reasons really worked there.
Yeah.
It was really lame and just put her in a generic role in an action film.
Yeah.
They handled stature really well, though.
Oh, my God.
No, and that's the thing.
Cassie,
like I said, what the movie does right, it does
really
so
well.
Right.
Cassie was incredible.
That is
Cassie's
awesome. Some of the greatest little kid casting.
Yeah,
like,
she was so good.
Every time she was on, she stole the... She stole it. It was so good.
And
I loved it.
And how fantastic is it that this is a movie that satirizes the disaster porn we see in other superhero movies.
I loved it.
By having the model city be destroyed.
Be this big.
And it was just this big. No one's dying, but
no,
you still get the
danger.
Gratuitous city destroying
Brilliant.
Scene. And at the same time, I cared about that scene more than I cared about Sokovia.
The stakes were actually high.
The stakes were personal.
Wait, are you guys talking about the very end?
In the bedroom?
Yeah.
And in the bedroom,
so good.
And in
what is this,
the
battle for ants?
Right. And the whole thing is that you made us care about Scott and his family enough.
Yeah,
the stakes were high.
The stakes were high, but they were also personal. They were personal,
exactly.
High stakes. And you were rooting for Scott Lang You're rooting for Scott Lang to get to mend this relationship.
Right.
And then the relationship is threatened by the big bad guy, and now you're like, no, screw you.
Yeah.
He's gonna kick your ass, and I can't wait to watch it. And then on top of that, it didn't destroy an entire city. They destroyed these, like,
Corey Stoll never showed training at all. And then Corey Stoll just had all the abilities in that ant suit.
Like, we could nitpick all sorts of stuff.
No, that was my first thought at all.
When I saw it the second time, I was like, wait, he hasn't had any training at all in Scott Lang. Because
he just learned how to shrink a human.
Who cares?
Okay, I was just...
Who cares?
Also,
no, I get it. I'm there with you. But the movie worked so well in so many other ways, with the exception of, like, I wish that they had treated Hope a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Better. Just period.
Just better,
like,
period.
She's not
other than that.
Well.
I put this very easily in, like, one of my top six. Like,
it's in my top six. I think it's,
you know,
six.
Like, it's so good.
This storytelling was more solid in this than Iron Man 3, mm-hmm. than Iron Man 2, than Ultron. Like, it's just it had a straight character arc. It had a straight through storyline, and that worked. Now again, It absolutely has flaws, and I don't think we should ignore those.
Almost every single film is going to have flaws.
But even beyond that, like, these are things that we know better by now. We've known better for years by now.
Yeah.
And it's really lame that we're still doing this. You know, it's not a new thing of like, oh, this is a trope. We don't know. Yeah, we know about this for years now. We should be better than this. But like I said, like on the whole, really fun. And the fact that, you know, you have people excited for an Ant-Man battle. And going back to that, there are so many superhero movies that I think they, because it's a movie, you think, well, the stakes have to be a certain level. Mm-hmm. And so Spider-Man is always saving the city from destruction. Or, you know, Batman, like, all of Gotham will die in nuclear fire if you don't.
This was a model city.
And this was, yes, there is the overlying threat of the Yellow Jacket, what that'll mean for warfare. Mm-hmm. But the real stakes are Cassie and Scott.
Yeah.
And
that
the pins.
Family dynamic, yeah.
And Van Dyne. And I think they need to remember, more superhero movies need to remember, that works. It's personal stakes. Dread was just... It wasn't, you know, this all of Mega City will die if we don't. No, it's Dredd and Anderson will die if they don't save the day. And that was enough.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Because you invest in your hero instead of investing in an imaginary city.
Well, going back to the Wasp, I mean, Marvel clearly has more plans for her. Like, they have the suit for her.
But we also know she's not going to be in Civil War.
But she was originally slated to be in it. In the original, but they didn't want to waste her.
But even that is sort of a lame thing to me. It's like, what's it wasting to, like,
They want to have her, like...
Have a dramatic entrance.
Have a bigger
powerful
entrance, have a
but
more powerful
entrance.
But
then we could have just done that here.
Could have, but didn't.
You know?
So...
It's like they keep giving reasons for forestalling Captain Marvel, for forestalling Wasp, for forestalling Black Panther. And I'm just like, guys, it's been like 9 movies now. Like, get the fuck off.
Yeah, well, maybe it's the board of directors and Marvel's trying to prove that there's a market for these people. I don't know. I'm trying to trust them. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt.
They're
doing
good work in general. I'm just saying, like, I'm also not going to ignore, like, things that are coming off lazy.
Now, I do want to point out that there was the Garrett Morris cameo, which was great.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
That was so fun.
Garrett Morris, SNL cast. He was part of the original Primetime. Ready for Primetime Players.
1979, they did a superhero dinner party where he was Ant-Man. He was the guy in the taxi cab, if you guys missed it.
So good.
Yeah, Margot Kidder was in that episode.
Yeah, yeah. Where Lois Lane and Bill Murray was Superman and Dan Aykroyd was Flash. And they all make fun of Ant-Man because he's like the super lame one. And we want to talk about the Quantum Realm real fast. That's going to be setting up all of Phase 3. Like all the really weird news. That's just going to be weird stuff.
Well, you can easily... I mean, this is their fancy name for the microverse, and really a more accurate name for what it would be.
My only negative on the film, I just have one. I'm in the minority. I hated the post-credit scene involving Cap and Falcon. I thought it was a huge cop-out.
It was just kind of lame.
It negated all the stakes from Winter Soldier and then leading into Age of Ultron. I love the scene in Age of Ultron where they're like, we're hunting him, and it's a little, and then you feel these like incredible stakes, and then those stakes are resolved by showing him in like a vice thing in a basement just like
I found him.
It felt like, wait, the Winter Soldier fell victim to a vice grip?
Yeah,
like
what was he reaching for, a Twinkie in the other side of the wall? Like, it just felt so contrived. It felt such like a bad comic in a comic book in the bad sense, like a Batman and Robin moment in a really good movie. Really affected me, and I loved the movie. It's in my top 5. That was my only negative.
Yeah. All right. We do need to start wrapping up. So I will say that we chose our top 5 for what is Ant-Man Scott Lang's favorite thing to steal from a picnic. That is Ron Pickles, Schlemmer said, Janice restraining order. Daniel Ibe, strawberries, because he's getting ready to jam this opening weekend. This was a couple weeks ago. Connor Brown, a club sandwich, because he feels left out of it. He feels left out of the club. Jasper Elwes says, our hearts. Also Coy for Panda Pool and Deadpool 2. And Justin James says, any and all booze from the picnic basket. You know, he's got to keep his aunts happy. One bottle of beer and the entire colony could party for a month. So those are our top 5. They're going to be up for you guys to vote on. We'll go over that next week. And the winner will get 2 free tickets to Wizard World.
I've got one more I need to shout out.
Oh,
question
shout
of the
out.
Week from 3 weeks ago. This gentleman, Fujito247, wrote on YouTube, what would Ant-Man take to a picnic? Ant-Man would shrink so he would be undetected while extracting the last beer out of the cooler. While carrying his prize away with much delight, Ant-Man is suddenly stopped as he feels an unknown force pulling the beer in the opposite direction. He turns around to witness his opponent, with their hand grasped at the other end of the bottle. Ant-Man, with a disgruntled leer, has come face to face with the one and only person who dares to defy him, Drunk Coy. So, Fujito247, I just got to say that you were watching me on Saturday, and I appreciate you writing about it.
See, that's all you have to do. It's like, we don't want to waste them. Well, when not give them a dramatic entrance, just write something like that.
Yeah. This guy wrote some great things. Yeah. I love
you,
yeah.
If you don't want to waste it, don't waste it. Write a dramatic scene.
Real quick, shout out to Eric Sabio. It is his birthday.
Yeah.
Today.
What up, Eric?
So he says he loves the excitement that we bring to the coverage.
I see what you did there. I see what you did. My birthday is in January, so you're not special.
What? Mine's in October. Does that make me more special?
No.
Because it's coming up? No. I still have to look forward to?
No.
All right.
And I got my iTunes shout-outs.
Oh, do them real fast. We got to wrap up.
Okay, so Tough Soldier, MP Six-Pack, Reformed Baptist. Funny name.
Love it.
Spawn the Gambit. Interesting. Digsg.
What are you reading?
I'm not kidding. That's what.
Digsg. No, that's really it.
Wow. Man, that's real life. So, yeah. I want to shout out you guys. You guys are awesome. Thanks for shouting out. And I guess that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do want to go back.
Oh, Johnny C. Cross. You said it. You asked for a shout out. Johnny C. Blaze is always like, you know, tweeting and good man.
Is that your pick for the week, Captain Marvel? I mean, there's so many good ones.
Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps is freaking awesome.
A-Force has been great.
A-Force is fun. I'm not just saying that because I know the people writing it. Like, these are really solid books.
Yeah.
We were talking about there's a nostalgic mourning period in having been there when Ultimate Marvel began and now watching it end.
Yep.
So it's I have to say, I'm actually enjoying the tie-ins more than the main Secret War series.
Oh, man, I am loving the Secret
Wars. I think Secret Wars is interesting, but the tie-ins are just...
The tie-ins are great.
They're so good.
Even 1872, the ones I expected nothing out of, are killing it.
Like, fun.
Everything right now in the tie-ins is
great. It's all great. So I'm sorry that we didn't get a chance to talk as much about the Quantum Realm as we wanted to. We're running out of time, but if you guys will tweet at me, at the Matt Key, I'll give you my personal opinions on everything if you guys have specific questions. But we've got to wrap it up. That's our show. Thanks for joining us. Do you guys have any final thoughts?
I'll do my comic stuff on Twitter because I want to tell you guys some comics.
So
ask me if you want to know what comics you like.
Yeah. Come and play with us on Twitter later today and tomorrow.
Yeah, you can reach out to me on Twitter at Sizzler Kissler. I'm going to be doing the DC show today as well.
Nice.
And, I've got my podcast rocking out, Crazy Six of Geeks. You can find it on iTunes. We've got a couple episodes up. It just rebooted this month. And we are on SoundCloud. So, nice. Crazy Six of Geeks.
On SoundCloud.
And this week's episode is me talking to an attorney about some of the legal ethics
of
Daredevil.
That's really
cool. In the comics.
I don't have anything to talk about except come play with me on Twitter and talk to me about Doctor Strange stuff.
My Twitter thing came back, and then also they changed my name on Amazon from Koi Jandro to Corey Jandro. So now I have a slew of fake me's. The internet is just more fake
they
me than
you.
Real me. It's just a struggle.
We want to give a special thanks to our prize sponsor, Wizard World Conventions, where pop culture comes to life. They're in Richmond, Virginia next week. Then they go to Chicago August 20th through the 23rd, and then they're in San Jose September 4th, 5th, and 6th. So plenty of great places, and it's covering all the coasts, I think. Plenty of places to go. Please do not forget to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Marvel Movie News. Rate us and leave us a comment, and Koi will read your name if you give us 5 stars. Find us on YouTube, like us, subscribe through the Popcorn Talk Network. If you comment and thumbs us up, it keeps us coming back to you. Please also find us on Facebook / Marvel News Show. And you can find us on Twitter at Marvel News PTN. I'm Matt Key at the Matt Key.
I'm Alan Kistler at Sizzler Kistler.
I'm Koi Jandro at CoyJandreau.
And make sure you tweet at Meredith that you missed her and tell her to get better. And that's our show. See you next week, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.